All right. Good morning, everyone. Let's begin. So we're continuing this week in Kapitel Tesva. I'm sorry. Oh yes, I don't have an extra. There should be extras. I'm sorry. Are we out in the back also? There should be extra sheets in the back and on the table when you walk in. Okay. So we continue this week with Kapitel Tesvav. So just very quickly again, the Kapitel begins, Mizmor leDavid Hashem miyagur be'ohalecha miyishkon bahar kotshecha. Who will dwell in your tent? Who will live on your holy mountain? And then David HaMelech goes on to explain a whole number of different attributes, a whole number of midos that David HaMelech seems to understand ultimately create the paradigm for successful living. So last week we discussed the context of this particular kapitel. We saw the interesting Gemara in the Yerushalmi who explained that during the generation of David HaMelech, as much as they were behaviorally pious, there was a fundamental breakdown in their interpersonal conduct. So therefore, the Yerushalmi understands that all of the things that are mentioned in this kapitel refer to different aspects between Adam l'chaveiro, in between man and his fellow man, in interpersonal conduct. David HaMelech trying to understand that the people are very wonderful with how they observe the mitzvot vis-a-vis God, but they're treating each other terribly. And therefore, he goes ahead and creates this kapitel, which essentially is a small, clear, narrowly defined path or guide for successful interpersonal living. We spent our time last week really focusing on the opening sentence of Miyagur ba'ohalecha, Miyishkon bahar kotshecha. We saw four different approaches for what the ohel is, for what the tent is referring to what the mountain is referring to, why the word yagur, which usually refers to temporary dwelling, versus yishkon, which is more permanent dwelling. What I'd like to move on now this week is what we began just in the last couple of moments of last week's share, which is to begin to actually focus on the particular video. So I put over here on your sheet the first line that we're going to look at. Holech tamim ufoel tzedek v'dover emes bilvavo. Literally translated, a person works tamim. I'm going to not define that word for now because it's a very complicated word. Perhaps the simplest definition would be complete. Holech tamim, one who walks in a complete fashion, fa'al tzedek, does good and righteous acts, dover emes bilvavo, and speaks truth in his heart. So the truth is, there are two different ways that we could kind of dissect this. We could look at it as an entire phrase, because sometimes when you find it in Tehillim, and it's not just true in Tehillim, you find it in many places in Tanakh, that when things are written in one particular pasuk, they're not meant to be understood, let's say, one by one individually, but they're meant to be understood in a continuum. So if we, for a moment, go ahead and take that approach, so let's look at Holech Tamim, Fo'al Tzedek, Dover Emes Bilvavo as one thought. As one thought. So take a look at number two. Sort of Hirsch seems to, in fact, understand it as a continuum. There should be sheets in the back on the two back tables and in the front. So Rav Hirsch in number two says the following. Rav Hirsch writes, Holech Tamim. See, he quotes, he refers us to Bereishis, which we'll come back to a little bit later on. Holech Tamim is the moral way of life followed by the individual. That moral integrity, which subordinates all its physical and spiritual desires without reservation to the sovereignty of the moral law. This is a prime prerequisite for a Jewish way of life, which is characterized above all by the control and sanctification of physical sensuality. According to Jewish truth, physical, sensual bestiality and spiritual elevation to God cannot coexist. God drives away the immoral man from the threshold of his house. Tara is the basic character of the Jewish divine sanctuary and is expressed by the observance of the chukim. Okay, so the first thing says Rav Hirsch is tamim refers to morality. Refers to morality. Now, understand, when we speak about morality, so morality can mean a number of different things. We speak about morality in terms of how we treat one another. We speak about overarching morality as being a guiding light for all of man's ethical behavior. Rav Hirsch seems to understand morality in a very narrowly defined fashion as sexual morality. Sexual morality. So David HaMelech is beginning by saying that nothing gets off the ground if a person does not subscribe to a code of sexual morality. What Hirsch is trying to highlight over here is that if a person doesn't have a sense of we'll call it physical morals, then they could try to go ahead and connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in as many ways as possible, but the person, him or herself, is damaged. There's something fundamentally flawed in the individual. He is immoral. You know, I've quoted this before. Chazal codified a really wonderful phrase. And the phrase is, Tovel v'sheretz biyado. So, you know, the imagery is not so pleasant, but it gets the point across. If a person has to go to the mikvah, a person is ritually, a person is tameh, they go to the mikvah. So, we go into the water, and once a person goes into the water, comes up, a person has achieved a new state of tara. So what happens if a person holds a dead rodent in their hand? So a dead rodent conveys tumah, conveys ritual impurity. So a person could go up and down the mikveh as many times as they want, say as many tefillos, as many brachos. If I'm holding the source of impurity in my hand, then there's no tara that could be affected. And the amazing part about tara, which is a little bit of the scary part as well, is it's all or nothing. Either you're tahor or you're not tahor, right? Either you are ritually pure or you're ritually impure. There are many other things in life that you could be a little bit of this and a little bit of that. When it comes to tumah and tahara, you're either tahor or you're not tahor. You know, interestingly enough, the Baal HaTanya, and this is, I'm just sharing this because I think it's interesting. The Baal HaTanya writes that in reality, there's no such thing as a beinoni. You know, if you look at the Rambam and Hilchos Tshuva, the Gemara already brings this down, that the Gemara says that the Rambam says that a person who has 50% mitzvos, 50% averos, that's a beinoni. That's a beinoni. That's an in-betweener. So the Baal HaTanya writes, there's no such thing as a beinoni. You're either a rasha or you're a tzaddik. So what does that mean? So the Baal HaTanya says very simple. When I'm doing a mitzvah, I am 100% tzaddik. When I'm doing an avera, I am 100% rasha. The difference is, says the Baal HaTanya, most of us are constantly in flux. Most of us are constantly vacillating between being 100% tzaddik and 100% rasha. It's a very dramatic view. What the Baal HaTanya says is, a person, we exist in absolutes. Yes. Agree. It's not just you. It's not just you has a problem with the Baal HaTanya. Everyone has a problem with the Baal HaTanya. Because it's a very, because the truth is, we often assume that we live our lives in this balance where we have a lot of good, we also do some things that are not so good, but if we do some things that are not so good, we still have a lot of good. So the Baal HaTanya is a very dramatic view. The truth is, if you want to understand where he gets it from, you know, if you go back, this is not our topic, but a little commercial. If you go back in Bereshit, so when Avram Avinu has to send away Hagar and Yishmael, so we know the famous, Rashi quotes the famous Medrash that says that Yishmael is dying, tachas achas asichim, right? He's dying underneath the thorn bushes, and the Malachim are saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, let him die. Look how much trouble his descendants are going to cause your descendants. And what does the Torah say? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu heard the call of the Nar, Basher Hu Sham. You want to hear something even more amazing? When the Gemara Maseches Rosh Hashanah discusses about the nature of Din on Rosh Hashanah, the Gemara quotes that Pasuk. Basher Hu Sham. So there is this idea that sometimes a person exists in a freeze frame. That's the idea of the Baal HaTanya. So I'm doing a mitzvah. Even if it's not a perfect mitzvah, most of us have difficulty performing the perfect mitzvah, but it's a mitzvah nevertheless. So in that freeze frame, I'm a tzaddik. In the next freeze frame, when I'm doing something that's not so great, the opposite of a tzaddik. Again, I'm not quoting to the Baal HaTanya as a model for living, because I think it's a very difficult model to subscribe to, but I'm just pointing out as an illustration of what Hirsch is saying over here. The David HaMelech says, Mi'agor b'olach mi'ishkan b'hol ha'kotshecha. What is the first thing? What's the first ingredient to a successful relationship with God? Says David HaMelech, says Rav Hirsch quoting David HaMelech, morality. Morality. Not overarching morality. We're not talking about your business ethics. We're talking about sexual morality. If a person exists within the framework of immorality, says David HaMelech, it is impossible to begin to establish a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. For the very, it's Tovel v'sheretz biyado. If a person exists in a construct of immorality, there is too much impurity that is there. Now, I just want to point out, that's not true, interestingly enough, about any Aveira. There's something, says Rav Hirsch, about immorality that fundamentally tarnishes the individual, that prevents them from beginning to forge this relationship. That's all I come. Yes?
Does this apply to
a
non-Jew as well?
I've got enough problem with Jews. You know, let's worry. I don't know. The truth is, in general, look, non-Jews have a moral code also. Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach demands for morality. Shemitzos B'nei Noach has all of pretty much the same basic levels of morality that we have. There are nuanced differences in the laws of marriages and divorce, but they have a code of morality as well. Look, the truth is, you can see history proves this point. Cultures that were excessively immoral ultimately doomed themselves. You cannot exist in a culture that is rife with immorality. It doesn't work. So according to Rav Hirsch, that's holich tamim, sexual morality. Next, towards the end of letter A, the second requirement is poel tzedek, social justice, the fulfillment of the mishpatim, obedient honesty in our dealings with our fellow men. So if holich tamim is physical sexual morality, poel tzedek represents interpersonal morality. So what he calls social justice, how we treat each other, honesty in all of our dealings. Look at letter B. The act of dishonesty against another man, just as any other excess of morality, is an abomination to the Lord. And he goes on, skip down to letter C. I'm sorry, to the end of letter B. The third and final requirement for a way of life that is truly ethical and honest is Vidover MS Bilvavo, the veracity of thought and speech. The word he speaks are true, and the truth which passes over his lips also dwell within his heart. This idea that we refer to in other places in the Gemara as Toho Kibaro, that ultimately what you see on the outside, the image I project, is indeed the image that I have internally as well. That there is consistency with who I am on the inside and the way I lead my life. So according to Rav Hirsch, David HaMelech begins by saying, if you want to know the three basic pillars, the first three initial pillars upon which our relationship with God stands, it is holich tamim, sexual morality, poel tzedek, social justice, right? Being good interpersonal morality, dover emes bilvavo. So maybe the way you'd have to say it is almost like holich tamim, sexual morality, poel tzedek, social morality, dover emes bilvavo, inner morality. This idea that a person is genuine in terms of his relation, in terms of his morality, a person is genuine in terms of his interpersonal conduct, and a person is genuine vis-a-vis himself. That the person, the image I project to others, is indeed the same image that I truly believe in, truly subscribe to internally as well. I put a lot more on here from Rav Hirsch. You can read it on your own. But that's Rav Hirsch. So Rav Hirsch clearly goes with the idea that this first phrase is most effective if it's understood in a continuum. We're building. You have to start with holich tamim, then poel tzedek, then dover emes bilvavo. It's a progression. If you take a look at number three, the Zera Yaakov, and again, I apologize for the quality of the print, lack of quality of the print. So the Zera Yaakov also looks at this as a continuum, and he says the following. I'll read it to you. Actually, I'm not going to read it to you. Yeah, I should have brought the sefer. Okay. Well, I'll read to you the first couple of lines. He says, "Holech tamin ba'atzmo ufoel tzedek la'achirin." So the Zera Yaakov, again, agrees with Rav Hirsch in that the phrase is to be understood as a continuum, but disagrees with the understanding. Whereas Rav Hirsch, again, according to Rav Hirsch, holich tamim was morality, physical morality. According to the Zera Yaakov, holich tamim refers to the individual. Remember, Rav Hirsch had, here's what's going to be interesting. They're going to agree on the basic principles. What they're going to disagree is on the order. According to Rav Hirsch, the progression is sexual morality, social justice, how would we say, Dover Emes Bilbavo, it's not a word, but, you know, personal genuinity. Being a genuineness, a real genuineness. So the Zer Yaakov flips it. He says Holech Tamim is la'atzmo. So Rav Hirsch's Dover MS Bilvavo is the Zer Yaakov's Holech Tamim. Holech Tamim means I have to be a complete person. What does that mean, a complete person? That if you look inside, that the image, again, the best way to recognize this is everybody puts on a concerted effort to project the right kind of image. Sometimes the fundamental disconnect is that the image that we project is not necessarily the person we are on the inside. And by the way, it cuts both ways. Sometimes a person projects a terrible image while on the inside they're a wonderful person. Sometimes a person projects a wonderful image while on the inside they're really broken. So Holech Tamim means that a person is supposed to reconcile these two identities. Inner identity, external identity, so that personal genuinity, that personal cohesion, that sense of wholeness is remained intact. He goes on, Upoel Tzedek, I'm just reading to you in the first two lines, La'achirim. So Poel Tzedek, interesting enough, this he agrees with Rav Hirsch. Poel Tzedek is the same for both of them in terms of how you act with other individuals. And lastly, Dover MS Bilvavo. All right, see here, you're going to have to skip down a little bit. So he says the following. It's by letter B. It's by letter B. Dover Acher. All right, now I'm just going to tell it to the outside. Dover MS Bilbao says the Zer Yaakov is like this, something really amazing. He says that sometimes in life, things happen to us, and we question why. We question why. And things happen to us, and it's normal. We question the justice of God. We wonder. And by the way, lest you think that makes you any less from, it's not true. HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu welcomes it, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu encourages it. And the perfect proof to that is the one who really did this in the most dramatic fashion. Well, Avraham Avinu did it first when he challenged the will of God by stone. But David HaMelech himself says it so acutely when he says the words, Keili, Keili, Lama Azavtani. Lama Azavtani, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where have you gone? David HaMelech captures the essence of a person who is suffering when they feel fundamentally forsaken and forgotten. So what happens in those times in life where I wonder, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where's your justice? Where's your rachamim? Where's your compassion? Where's your sense of decency? You say you love me, but yet, where have you gone? So says Zer Yaakov something so profound. Dover MS Bilvavo. It's okay to question. It's okay to challenge. It's even okay to lash out. And by the way, just one other example of this. Rav Soloveitchik explains so beautifully. We know that Rachmana Litzlan, lo aleinu, when someone loses a loved one, right? Someone who you're obligated to mourn for. So the period between death and burial is a period called aninos. What happens during aninos? Nothing. A person is exempt from all positive mitzvos. A person doesn't make brachos. A person doesn't daven. Why? So the truth is, the classic understanding of it is osik b'mitzvah patra min ha-mitzvah. The assumption is that a person is going to be taking care of the needs of the dead. A person is going to be making burial arrangements, writing a eulogy, whatever, calling people. So therefore, you are engaged in the performance of the mitzvah of caring for the dead. Therefore, you are exempt from everything else. Rav Soloveitchik explained so beautifully that Chazal understood that when a person loses someone who they love, they are often angry, they are often resentful, they are often hurt. So to force a person to connect with God under those circumstances, says the Rav, is wrong and counterintuitive. So what do? We go ahead and we tell the person, you know what? Gather your feelings. Pull yourself together a little bit. We are not going to force you to come into contact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu right now. Again, the hiatus is not too long. It's only until burial. A person is not permitted to remain estranged from God. If I have negative feelings towards God, you know whose responsibility it is to repair that relationship? It's mine. It's not God's problem, it's my problem. I have to work it out. I have to find my way back. So, okay, once the grave is closed, Shiva begins. I'm now back in the relationship. We have to work out our difficulties. But Chazal understood that there would be this strain. So Zera Yaakov writes like this: a person experiences difficulties in life. A person has to know that even if they need a little bit of distance, or even if they don't feel as close, Dover Emes Bilvavo. I have to always know in my heart that whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is emes. You know, sometimes in life, you could appreciate something as being intellectually true, even though you have very difficult times feeling it. You have very difficult times feeling it. It's like when you have a fallout in a relationship with someone who you love very much. So intellectually, I know I love the person, but yet emotionally, Baruch Hashem, no one here gets upset at people. Wonderful. I've heard from other people who do get upset with people who they love, right? That you say to yourself, you know, I love you, I can't stand you. I don't want to be in the same room as you right now. You know, I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to say, do I love you? Of course I love you. What's the question? So you could intellectually understand that things are a certain way, but emotionally you're very distant. So Dover MS Bilbao says as Zera Yaakov so beautifully, that there are times when our relationship with God is fundamentally strained. There are times when ultimately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I have a lot of difficulty with what you did to me. But, Dover Emes Bilvavo. But God, there's one thing I can tell you for sure. That no matter how angry I am, no matter how resentful I am, no matter how forsaken I feel, I will always know that everything you do is Emes. And even if I can't feel it, and even if I can't appreciate it, I'm always going to intellectually know it. So according to the Zera Yaakov, again, you have this same idea. Holech tamim, a person has to be genuine, tzolal tzedek. But it's not enough just for you to be personally genuine. A person also has to what? A person has to know how to exercise that proper conduct towards one another. So now we have the Bein Adam la'atzmo taken care of, that's holech tamim. Bein Adam la'chavero taken care of, poel tzedek. And Bein Adam la'makom is what? Dover emes bilvavo. That a person always has to appreciate and accept the MS of everything that God does, even in those times that I have difficulty feeling it, appreciating it, or truly understanding it, I accept it as an intellectual reality. It's interesting, by the way, that according to the Zera Yaakov, David HaMelech would put this as one of the foundations of faith. Because David HaMelech more than anyone understood the true fabric and nature of the human condition. And David HaMelech understood that there's one thing for sure, which is, you know, they say that there are, you know, the certain things in life are death and taxes. The truth is, there's one more sure thing in life, and that is suffering. Everyone suffers. Baruch Hashem, if a person has made it to a particular point in life and they haven't had any major suffering, that's an incredible bracha. But everyone suffers. That is an inescapable reality. Some people suffer physically, some people suffer emotionally, and just so you should know, I think it's even more profound. For the feeling person, Rav Soloveitchik writes about this in the introduction to his book, Lonely Man of Faith, where the Rav writes that being a thinker is a very isolating experience. Why? Because the truth is, if a person is truly empathic, which is what that's our primary mandate as Jews, to be people who are filled to the brim with empathy, the truth is, and it sounds a little bit depressing, but you're always suffering. You're always suffering. Because you look around the world, you look around the community, you look around, and the truth is, there's always someone experiencing a hardship. That's supposed to weigh on a person's heart. So therefore, according to the Zera Yaakov, one of the fundamentals that David HaMelech is teaching us is Dover Emes Bilvavo. Suffering is part of the fabric of the human condition. Whether it's yours or whether it's nationally. Therefore, a person has to condition themselves to appreciate the Emes of everything that Kodesh Baruch Hu does, ingrain that in my heart, that intellectually I feel it, even sometimes though emotionally I have difficulty accepting it. Yes? Right. There's no question that we could appreciate the redemptive value of suffering, but it's a hard sell. It's a hard sell to the sufferer. You know, there's an amazing Gemara in Brachos.
I said it's intellectual.
100%. There's I don't remember who the Tana in the Gemara was, but the Gemara Maseches Brachos talks about Yisurin Shel Ava. That there's a concept, a very theologically problematic concept, not problematic, but difficult concept, that sometimes God visits suffering upon people because he loves them. So the Gemara discusses that the Talmidim of a particular Tana went to go visit him. And the truth is, this is an amazing thing, just as an aside, don't ever try this when you're doing Bikur Cholim. They asked him, what did you do wrong? What did you do wrong? Do not try that, right? What did you do wrong? You're suffering so terribly, tell us, what did you do? So, but here's what's amazing, is that you see, when you want to talk about Niskatnu Hadoros, how we become smaller as we go on, this was the way they were Mevakir Cholim. This is what they did. That you went to someone who was suffering, and you said to them, you know what, you're suffering. It's time for a Cheshbon HaNefesh. It's time for some inner contemplation. We're your friends, we love you, we care about you. Let us help you with this process. Put it out there. What have you done wrong? And so they go. So this Tana, who's sitting there, laying there, dying, goes through the list. I didn't. Did you do that? And did you do this? No. Did you do that? No. And they go through the whole list. So they, at the end of the conversation, it turns out that amazingly enough, this Tana had not done anything wrong. So the students then say to the Rabbi, they say, you see from here what? Yisurin shel Ahava. Good news, Rebbe. Good news. Good news. You're not suffering because you've done anything wrong. You're suffering because HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves you so much. And this particular Tana responds, Lo hein velo scharan. You know what? No thank you. No thank you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I appreciate it. Just send the card next time. You know, no thank you. What he's literally willing to say is, I am willing to give up the schar. I'm willing to give up the reward that comes from the suffering. Just take away the suffering. So this is always the tension. Is there meaning in suffering? Of course. Could there be growth through suffering? Of course. Could suffering be fundamentally cathartic? Are there people in life who literally get a new hold on life and lead more enriched lives because of suffering? 1,000%. But most people would still rather not have the suffering. But nevertheless, as we know, that's not our choice to make. Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't ask us if we want it or not. And therefore, according to the Zohar Yaakov, David HaMelech is saying, be prepared. Be prepared. Because it happens, and therefore, Dover Emes Bilvavo. Condition yourself now, while times are good, while the seas are calm and serene. Tell yourself that everything that God does is Emes. So that when the wheel of suffering comes to me, which inevitably it will, I am already conditioned to at least intellectually accepting that all God does is Emes. Yes? So you have to understand also, so many times in Tanakh you find this lave does mean intellect. Yeah, even though we don't, just like, you know, Baal Tanya also points out that the neshama is not here, the neshama is here. The neshama is by the mind, by the moach. So these are often used interchangeably. So you're right, even though lave we normally associate with emotion, it can also mean intellect. As halavai, a person should be able to emotionally get to that level as well. I think that it's easier to intellectually condition oneself to believe that everything that God does is MS, because we operate every single day by divorcing intellect from emotion. That's my sin b'chol yom. So I can believe it intellectually, but emotionally I'm in a very different place. I think all that, according to Zohar Yaakov, all that David HaMelech is asking us is to intellectually condition ourselves that everything is MS. Okay, so the common denominator between Rav Hirsch and the Zohar Yaakov is that they both agree that the first line is to be read as a continuum, and interestingly enough, they both pretty much agree with the same basic principles, just in a different order. So again, according to Rav Hirsch, holech tamim, sexual morality, poel tzedek, social justice, dover emes bilvavo, I'm going to use it again, a genuinity, right? A genuineness about the individual, inside and out, are two reconciled identities. According to the Zohar Yaakov, Holich tamim atzmo. That's the genuineness. Paul Tzedek, same idea as a social justice. Le'acherim, dover emes bilvavo. Person has to recognize that even sometimes in life where I can't externally accept what God has done, in my lave, in my heart, in my intellect, and yes, halavai, in my emotion, I accept the emes of all that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does. Yes. Right. Agreed. Right. MS just means that it's truth. It's truth. Truth often hurts. Truth often hurts. Okay, but now, very good point. So now, let's just spend a couple of moments focusing on the individual idea. So now that we've seen two approaches that look at them together as one, I'd like to break them apart a little bit, because this word tamim, let's look at tamim just as its own midah, is a very intriguing word. It's very intriguing because it could be so erroneously translated as perfection. And you find, by the way, you'll see that certain commentaries on the Chumash actually do translate tamim as perfect, which of course is an egregious error because God doesn't demand perfection of us. Let's take a look at number four. So the Malbim takes a fascinating approach. The Malbim writes, Holich b'mitzvos shebein adam l'makom, shebo yishalich lifnei Hashem, shiyah holich tamim. So the Malbim writes, actually, I think we quoted this last week in passing, that first of all, according to the Malbim, the tamimos that is being referred to over here is being referred to man's relationship with God. So what is tamimos? What is tamim? Shegeder ha-tamimos, sheya'aseh kol ma'asav l'shem Hashem bilvad, below b'li shum p'niya chitzonis. So according to the Malbim, what does tamim mean? That holy tamim, I should serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how? How? With no ulterior motive. Now, what is ulterior motive? Now, ulterior motive means a lot of things. You know, we could talk about more sinister ulterior motive, like a person does things for covet, but even if a person is not doing it for honor or for respect in the eyes of others, but let's say a person says, you know what, I want to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu because I want reward. I want reward, be it reward in this world, be it reward in the next world, right? I want to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu because there's something in it for me. We spoke about this last week. The society that we live in says that, sure, I'll do anything you want, just tell me what's in it for me. What's the payout? So says the Malbim, that's not the way we serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, there's a beautiful commentary. The Mishnah Perkei Avos says, Altu kavadim hamisham shnes harav amanas lekabal pras. Do not be like servants who worship the master for the sake of receiving reward. Rather, be like servants who worship the master, not for the sake of receiving reward. So the Me'iri, in his commentary on the Mishnah, yes. Okay. So the Me'iri, in his commentary on the Mishnah, says something amazing. He says, but I don't understand. He says, what does that mean? The Torah itself discusses reward. We say it two times a day. Listen to my mitzvahs and what? You're gonna have animals, you're gonna have agriculture. So what are you talking about? So the Me'iri says, it's not the pshat. Of course there's a reward. Of course there's reward. You know, there's a famous maisa. This is just a tangent on the tangent. There's a famous maisa that a man once came over to Rabbi Yitzchak of Berdichev, and he said to him, Rabbi, I have to tell you something. He said, you know, I don't keep anything. And I tell you, now that I don't keep anything, I don't believe in all of this stuff. I don't believe in all of this stuff. I have to tell you, I'm successful, I am wealthy, and look at your kahila, you know, a bunch of shlubs, you know, they have nothing, they this, they're so frum, they're so pious, and what do they have to show for it? You know, it says in Shema, v'hayayim shama tishma mitzosai. So God makes it sound like it's only if you listen to his mitzvos that you get all this reward. But look, I don't keep one mitzvah, and look at everything I get. So Rabbi Yitzchak said something so beautiful. He said, you know, the fact that you could ask that question means that you've recited Kriya Shema at least one time in your life. And there's not enough money in the world to repay you for that one mitzvah. So is there schar for mitzvahs? 100%. Of course there is. The Torah wouldn't say it. There's schar in this world. There's schar in the world to come. But you know, sometimes that schar is given out in ways that only HaKadosh Baruch Hu understands. Because sometimes I'm going to do a mitzvah that's going to generate an incredible amount of schar, but God knows that in Emirat Hashem, my grandchildren are going to need it much more than I do. And same way that many of us are beneficiaries from schar that was generated multiple generations ago. That's how the divine system works. So what the Me'iri says to the Mishnah is saying is, nobody goes to work for free. Nobody goes to work for free, no matter how much you love your job. If your employer were to tell you today, doing a great job, we love you. We love you. We want you to stay on forever. Only one little detail, we can't pay you anymore. Right? So I don't care how much you like your job. Most people are not showing up for work the next, not me, Chas v'Shalom, I would show up. Right? But most people are not showing up the next day in the office. So it says to me, that's the pshat. Don't be like the servant who expects payment on a regular schedule. You know, so the servant goes to work and he gets paid on the 15th and the 30th of each month. The servant goes to work and has a certain expectation for a wage being delivered by a particular time. That model can't be applied to the service of God. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not do direct deposits. God does not go ahead and pay us at particular intervals. Is there schar? 100% there's schar. So therefore, says the Malbim over here, that's what Tamimus means. Tamimus means worshipping HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the sake of worship. Again, I want to be clear. It doesn't mean worshipping God with absolutely no hope for schar or not thinking about schar. There is schar. There's plenty of schar. But that can't be the motivation. When I'm serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it has to be serving God without any kind of calculations involved. Okay, look at number 5, the Radak. And this carries on the same theme. He says, Va'atomim. So says Radak, so what is the Tamim? Hu mishi is asik be'inyone ha'olam hazeh b'derech timimus. See, here's what's interesting. So this is why I give you the sources. You could see it inside. But if you notice, contrast the wording of the Malbim and the Radak. So what does the Malbim say? In the back, going back to number 4 for just a moment. Shegeder hatemimus sheyase kol ma'asov l'shem Hashem. Ma'asov means what? What is that referring to? Mitzvos. So the Malbim says that Holeich Tamim really refers to one's performance of mitzvos. That's when I serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu by performing the dictates and the mandates of His Torah, I should do so without any external thoughts or motivation. I'm doing it because, very simply put, it is a privilege to serve. It is a privilege to serve the Ribono Shel Olam. Okay. But now look at the Radak in number 5. So the Radak says, Vahatamim, Humishi is asik b'inyone ha'olam hazeh b'derech temimus. So what did the Radak just add in? What's inyone olam hazeh? Everything. So the Radak says, one second, temimus doesn't just apply to mitzvos, but tamim is a way of life. Tamim is a way of life. Now what does that mean? So he explains it. Shelo yamik b'machshavto b'tachbulos ha'olam. That do not get too intellectually involved with the way the world works. So what is the Radak saying? So look at number 6. There's an amazing Gemara here. The Gemara says like this. Vayomim ahem, cholach hiskiyo olamus. Vayavo elav Yishayo ben Amos Hanavi, vayomre elav, komar shem tzav lebeischa kimeis atav lo sichya. So, just a backdrop to this is the Gemara explains that there's a tension between the prophet and the king, between Yishayo and between Chizkiyah. And what's the tension? The tension is everyone standing on ceremony. The prophet of Israel says the king should come to visit me. The king of Israel says the prophet should come and visit me. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, well, you know what we're going to do? The king is sick. So now the king can't go anywhere. Navi, you have an obligation to come be mevaker chola. Okay, that's just a backdrop. Not important for our purposes today. But in any event, the Navi says that in those days, Chizkiyahu HaMelech became very ill. Now I have to understand, Chizkiyahu HaMelech was one of our greatest kings, right? The Gemara discusses that he could have been the Mashiach. In fact, the Gemara says that during the days of Chizkiyah, here's something amazing, the children, were very well versed in the laws of Tumah and Tara. Now, it's hard for us to appreciate that because the truth is, when we hear about the laws of Tumah and Tara, we kind of shut off because ritual impurity is something that has not been shaykh to us for over 2,000 years. They're very complicated laws, very intricate laws, multiple different frameworks. So the Gemara tells us that during the days of Chizkiyah, there was such high level of scholarship amongst the children, that everyone knew Tumah and Tara. It was a golden age for the Jewish people. Now Chizkiyahu HaMelech is on his deathbed. He's dying. Okay, so the Gemara goes on, towards the end of the second line, number 6. Mai ki meis atav lo sechaya. So it's interesting that the Navi comes to him and says the Navi Yishayo comes to Chizkiyahu and says, listen, Chizkiyahu, you better give your final will and testament to your household because you're going to die and you're not going to live. Says the Gemara, okay, it's understood. If he's going to die, obviously he's not going to live. So why the double lashon? Mai ki meis atav lo techaya. Meis atav ba'olam azeh. So the Navi comes and tells Chizkiyahu, HaMelech, Chizkiyahu, Not only are you going to die in this world, but you have lost your portion in the world to come. So Chizkiyahu HaMelech says, what are you talking about? Right? What happened over here? Why did I give up my portion of the world to come? Listen to this. Amar lei, mishum delo asakta beperia berivya. It's because you never tried to have children. Now you have to understand something. The mitzvah of peria berivya, the Midrash Chinuch brings this down, is not a mitzvah to have children. There can't be a mitzvah to have children, because having children is not in our control. The Gemara Maseches Tainis explains that there are some keys that HaKadosh Baruch Hu only keeps for himself. Mafteach Shel Chaya, the key of childbirth, is one of those. So it's up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu if we have children. But the mitzvah Pir Verivya is to engage in a normal marital relationship to ultimately produce children. So the Navi says, you never even tried to have a family. Okay, so Amar Lei, so Chizkiyahu responds, yeah, I'm going to tell you why. Mishum dechazoi li beruach hakodesh, denafka minoi banim delomal. So says Chizkiyahu HaMelech, because I saw beruach hakodesh, that if I were to bring a son into this world, the son would be a terrible rasha. So I figured, better not to have a family, than to bring a rasha who's going to bring down the entire Jewish people with him. So listen to what the Navi responds to him. Amar lei, bahandi kafshi drachmana lamalach. So the Navi responds to the king, why are you getting involved in God's business? Don't get involved in God's business. God tells you to have a family, that's your business. What those children are going to be? Sure, as a parent, you have the obligation to make sure that you do your best to raise those children, that they grow up in a certain way. But at the end of the day, what they become, some of that is not in parental control. But that's not your job, to look into the future, Berech HaKodesh, and to see you're going to have rushes and have children. Sparkles to have a family, that's your mandate. So listen to this. And the Navi goes on. My dimefekadito iboy lachlame ovid. What is your responsibility? You do. And what is God's responsibility? God will do. So here the Navi rebukes the king for never having had a family. The king tries to defend his position by saying, I said it was going to be a rasha. And the Navi essentially tells him, mind your own business. God tells you to have a family, that's your business. Everything else is a Kaddish Baruch Hu's. So listen to this. So Chizkiyahu responds, Amar lei, hashta havli bartech. So Chizkiyahu says, okay, Yishayahu, no problem. You have a daughter, let me marry her. I'll marry your daughter, we'll have a family, Shalom HaYisrael. Efshar digarma zechusa didi, viditach v'nafki minoy benin demalu. Maybe my merit, Chizkiyahu's merit, and the merit of your daughter, being your daughter, the son of the daughter of the prophet, maybe our combined merit will be enough to produce a child who's not a rasha. Amar lei, kvar nigzra alecha gzeira. The Navi responds to the king and he says, sorry, too late. Too late, the divine decree has already been handed down to you, there's nothing you can do to change it. So, again, the king responds, Amar lei ben amotz. Ben Amos. So first of all, in general, when they would refer to people leaving off their first name just as the son of so-and-so, that was a disparaging way of referring to the individual. So the king has now lost his temper with the prophet. Ben Amos, son of Amos, kalei nevuasecha, may your prophecy cease. Why? But say, get out of here. You know why? Kach mikublani mi beis avi abba, because this is the masorah that I have. Afilu cheref chada munachas al tzavaro shel adam. Even if a sharp sword is suspended over a person's neck, al yimana atzma min arachamim. You should never stop davening for salvation. Never. So Chizkiyahu says, how can you tell me all is lost? Right? I'm sitting here, I'm alive, I'm breathing, I'm talking to you. All can't be lost. As long as I'm alive, there must be some hope for salvation. And the Gemara ends there. Now, how does the story end? The story ends that he does marry the daughter of Yishayahu, and they have a son by the name of Menashe. And he is horrible. Horrible. He introduced, actually the Gemara says, well, you have to be fair. He ruled for 55 years. One of the longest reigning monarchs. So the Gemara says that for 33 years he was a terrible Rasha, and for 22 years he tried to do tshuva. But he had introduced so much depravity and idolatry into the midst of the Jewish people that he was unable to undo what he had done. It's a tragic story because he really wanted to change in the end. So amazingly enough, you know, Chizkiyahu clearly saw clearly what his son was going to be. But why am I bringing you this Gemara? Because this is what the Radak is saying. The Radak is saying is Holech Tamim. Holech Tamim means, in a very simple and succinct way, excuse me because it sounds a little crass, but mind your own business. Now what does that mean? So the truth is, you know, there are people who go through life very troubled by all different things that they see in the world, right? Why do the righteous suffer? And you know, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us, then why does this happen? And what about this? And what about that? And how do I reconcile free will with divine foreknowledge? And all these good theological challenges that we contend with. And the Malbim says to us, or the Radak says to us, you know what? It's a waste of time. It's a waste of time. Because, you know, the Rambam actually discusses, I think I mentioned this, in Hilchos Tshuva, where the Rambam tries to understand how could we... Tshuva is dependent on free will. But how can you have free will if HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what's going to happen? And so the Rambam essentially answers, his answer is very interesting, that we don't understand God. So because we don't understand God, then we don't know what it means that we don't understand God. So what is Rambam essentially saying? Is it okay to question? Of course it's okay to ask the questions. But don't lose yourself in the questions. There are so many people that become so wrapped up in trying to figure out the how or the why, answers that they're never going to get questions that they're never going to get answers to. And therefore, says Radak, David HaMelech says, that's why you have to be a Holech Tamim. You know what our job in life is to recognize the questions are great questions. And we are entitled to ask as many of them as we want to. But ask, realize that more often than not, what? You are not going to get the answer you want, or any answer for that matter, and then move on. Move on. It doesn't negate the importance of the question. It doesn't negate the fact that the question is, but move on. Move on. People sacrifice a whole lifetime because they couldn't get an answer to a question. Something bothered me. See, it's my Simcha Yom, where people never experience something traumatic and they can't make sense of it. So what happens? Their life comes to a grinding halt because they can't get the answer. But I'm never going to get the answer. After 120, we get the answer. We're not going to have the answer now. So it says the Radak, don't sacrifice a productive life because you couldn't get an answer to a very important question. We're not negating the question. We have to be a Holech Tamim. That's why, unlike the Malbim, who more narrowly defines this as simple Holech Tamim means how you perform mitzvos, the Radak understands it, she is asik b'inyanei ha'olam hazeh b'derech tamimos. It's an approach to life. Shelo yamik b'machshavto b'tachbulo sa'olam. Do not get so caught up in the inner workings of the world that you get what we call analysis paralysis. Right? You're so caught up in trying to understand the hows and the whys and the this and the that, and then 50 years go by and I haven't accomplished anything. And I just want to point out, there's a very fine balance. The Radak is not telling us not to think. Right? We're not talking about over here, just do and don't worry about the why and just be a good boy and girl and just do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you. That doesn't work. That at least it doesn't work for our generation. It might have worked for previous, bless you. It might have worked for previous generations. It doesn't work for ours. So there's a very fine balance. A person has to strive to understand. A person has to strive to understand, but a person also, while they're striving to understand, also has to make sure that they are concurrently pushing their life forward, and that life doesn't come to a grinding halt because I'm faced with a situation that I can't make heads or tails of. You know, it's an interesting idea. Soloveitch, I think I've quoted this a number of times, but it's one of my favorite ideas is the Rav comments on the passage that I quoted before of Keli Keli Lama Azavtani. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why did you forsake me? So the Rav felt that David HaMelech could not have been asking that question because the Lama, the why, is the age-old question that no one's ever been able to answer. Therefore, says the Rav, what David HaMelech must have been asking is the same letters but vocalized differently. Keli, keli, lima. Lima azavtani. So what's the difference between lama and lima? Lama is why. Lima, for what? For what? Tell me what you want from me in this situation. What should I do? What should I accomplish? What should I be? Does it negate the lama? Of course not. Of course not. The lama is a very important question. But don't spend your life asking lama. After you spend a little bit of time asking lama, a person has to transition from lama to lima. And according to the Radak, that ultimately is the tzimimus. Not just in avodas Hashem, but in general, the way we interact with the greater world. Okay, so that leads us. Alright, you know what? I think what we're going to do is we're going to stop here for today. We'll stop here for today. We're not finished. Yes? That was just the Yerushalmi. That's what, the Yerushalmi's approach is that he felt that the motivation for the kapitel is because of breakdown of interpersonal conduct. Not all of the Mefarshim agree to that. Correct. That's why you have a lot of Ben Adon Lamakom here as well. All right, Emir Hashem, there is Shir next week on Tanis Esther. On Tanis Esther. So Emir Hashem will continue. We have to be a Tamim and keep going forward. Emir Hashem, yes. There is Shir next week.